For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It's July the 6th, and we are in Parshas Truma on page 460, and we are up to the courtyard. There is a picture on the next page, on page 463, of what the courtyard may or may not look like. At least it's one opinion of what it looks like. Okay.
Is it much locus about it?
Yeah, plenty.
Much locus about all of it.
Yeah. Okay, so Pasuk Test verse 9 on page 460. You shall make the courtyard of the Mishkan if as negev temana to the side of the south, kloim lechatzer sheish mashazar. You should have curtains for the chatzer, for the courtyard, made of linen or twisted linen, mea vama orech, 100 amos long, la peyaha echas, for one side. Now it doesn't tell you the width of the curtain. It only tells you the length of the curtain. On the side was 100 amos. The width is going to be its height. You're going to take this curtain, you're going to lay it out lengthwise, which is going to be the length of the side. But then the width of the curtain is going to be the height, because you're going to put the width up and down. It doesn't tell you at this point what the width of the curtain is. It just says that it's 100 amos long. So we know how long it is, but we do not know the height of the curtain. Pasuk Yud, verse 10. V'amudav esrim, its poles, there are 20 poles holding up this 100 amma length curtain. V'ad nehem esrim nechoshes, and its sockets are also 20, made out of copper. The poles would have been made out of wood, as we expect, even though it doesn't say so, but that would be the expectation, that the poles would be wood, although it doesn't say. It is possible the poles were also made out of copper, which would be a departure from what we've seen. From what we've seen until now, all of the poles are wood, and the sockets are metal, whether they're gold, whether they are silver, or whether they are copper. Here it doesn't tell you the material of the pole, but it does tell you that the socket is made out of copper. Vaveho amudim vachashukehem kasef. And then two other components, the vavim, that's the hooks of the poles, and their chashukim, which would be their, how do they translate here?
Bands
of silver. These chashukim, these bands, were purely, at least apparently, were purely aesthetic. That they had bands that went around these poles that were of silver to make them look nice. And the hooks, though, were functional. The hooks came down off of the pole, and it is to these hooks that they would attach the curtains. Now, although it doesn't say it so explicitly over here, the way Rashi explains what it looked like is that you had these poles, and then, somewhere towards the top of the pole, you had these vavim, which were these hooks. And they looked like upside-down vavs. So they would come down off the pole. I'm going to draw it on a diagonal. They would come down off the pole. They'd be embedded in the pole. And kind of come down off the pole and come up like a vav. So there'd be a hook that you could now hook something onto. Now, with just what the Chumash says, we might have thought that the curtains actually hung from the hooks. But Rashi says that the curtains actually were attached to a, it's not exactly clear what it looks like to me, but something like this, some sort of a rod with a hole, and that hole would then slip onto the hooks. And that's how you'd have this curtain hanging on to the hooks, which were in turn attached to the poles, which were in the sockets on the ground. That's the way they would work. According to Rashi, that's the way he sets it up. The Torah does not describe this rod with the hole, with the ring. That the Torah doesn't describe. The Torah describes the pole, the socket, the hooks, but does not describe this rod with the ring.
Where's the band? Excuse
me? The bands were somewhere in here. Like somewhere going around, either up here or down here in the middle, somewhere along the pole, you had these bands of silver to beautify the pole.
Those were the bands.
No.
No.
So there were 20 poles on the south side, which had a curtain of which had a length of 100 amos. Then the Torah continues, Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11. We have a similar thing on the north side. V'chein lifas tzafon ba'orech, same thing on the north side in length. Kiloim me'a orech, you had these curtains which were 100 long. V'amudav esrim, and its poles were 20, meaning there were 20 poles. V'adnehem esrim nechoshes, and the sockets, there were also 20 of them, and they were copper. Vavei ho'amudim v'chashukehem, and the hooks of the poles and their bands were kasef, were made out of silver. So that's the length of both the north side and the south side. V'rochav hechatzer lifas yam, the width of the courtyard on the west side, which would be the back of the Mishkan, behind the Mishkan, kemo'im chamishim amo, the curtain was 50 amos. It doesn't say long, but that's what it means. It was 50 amos long. Amudehem asara, dahneim asara. The poles were 10, and the sockets were 10. So the length of the curtain is half the size of the north and south. Therefore, the poles were also half the amount of poles. They were 10, not 20. Here, the Torah has not yet told us anything about bands nor hooks, and it also does not mention that the sockets were made out of copper. So the Torah is going to fill in those details presently. Pasuk Gimel, verse 13. What about the east side? The east side is the most complicated side because you have to have a doorway. Verochav hechatzer lifas kedla mizracha, and the width of the chatzer of the courtyard on the east side, the front side, was also chamishim amos, was 50 amos. So you have a rectangle. You have straight angles, and you have a rectangle. You have right angles, and you have a rectangle. Now, of those 50 amos on the west, v'chamesh esrei amos kemo'im lakasef, there were 15 amos of curtain at the shoulder, which means at the corner. Amudehem shlosha, v'adnehem shlosha, the poles were 3, there were 3 poles, and the sockets were 3. So, in other words, if you look at the picture, you see that in the east side, which on the picture on the next page is the side closest to us, the one at the front of the page, there you have the 50 amos from right to left, which is on the east side, was broken down to 2 corner pieces of 15 amos each, leaving a middle piece of 20 amos. And that's as the Torah continues to explain.
A cubit, the same as amos?
Yeah, an amos is a cubit. That's exactly right. Pasuk Tezva, verse 15. V'lakasef hasheni is for the second shoulder. Chamesh esrei kiloim was 15. The curtain was 15, which means 15 apparently in length. Amudehem shlosha ve'anehem shlosha. The poles, there were 3 of them, and their sockets, there were 3 of them. Ulishar echatzer, and for the gate of the courtyard, that would be the middle 20 amos there, you had a different material for that 20 amma middle section on the east side. Masach esrim amma, there was a screen of 20 amos, and this one was made of tcheles v'argamon v'salvas shani v'sheish mashzar. It was made of blue wool, purple wool, red wool, and spun linen, which was the same material as Okay, well, yeah.
All the
tapestry that we had before in the Mishkan itself. So the courtyard curtains are downgraded from the tapestry of the Mishkan, but this part of it was not downgraded. This part of it was similar to what we saw at the Mishkan. And it was Maaseh Rokeim. It was done with sewing, which was similar to the screen of that was used to get into the Mishkan itself. Amudehem Arba'a, Vadnehem Arba'a. It had four poles and four sockets. Again, not telling us the material of the sockets. Kol Amudei HaChatzer Saviv, all of the poles all around, Mechushakim Kesef, had bands of silver, which wasn't said yet about the east and west side. So now we see they also had bands of silver. Vavehem Kasef, they had hooks of silver. Ve'adnehem Nechoshes, and their sockets were made of copper. So now that verse, that pasuk fills it in for us. And now all of the poles all around, the sockets were copper. They had bands of silver. They had hooks of silver. Orech hechatzer me'avamos. So now it tells you the entire length and width. So far we only discussed the actual walls of the courtyard. But now the description of the courtyard itself. The length of the courtyard was 100 amos long. The rochav and its width, chamishim b'chamishim, was 50 by 50. And that's a little bit of a funny way of saying it. It should just say the width was 50. To say the width was 50 by 50 is a little bit funny. Width shouldn't, you know, by means two different directions. You don't say the width was 50 by 50. Mm-hmm. Length and width could be something by something. Width should only be one measurement, not two. So this has to be explained. Vikoma and its height. Now we finally get the height. We hadn't said anything about height until now. Chamesh Amos was 5 Amos. Sheish Mashzar, it was of spun linen. Vanehem Nechoshes, and again its sockets were made of copper. And finally, the Torah tells you one last pasuk about the utensils of the Mishkan. V'chol klei ha-mishkan, all the utensils of the Mishkan, v'chol avodaso, and all its work, v'chol yisedosav, and all of its pegs, v'chol yisdos ha-chatzer, and all the pegs of the chatzer, of the courtyard, nechoshes, were made of copper. Meaning that if you were going to make utensils, other utensils that have not been mentioned in this parsha, we mentioned many utensils, we mentioned the table and the altar and the menorah and the ark. We've talked about a lot of different utensils. But if you're going to make other utensils for the Mishkan that have not been mentioned until now, and also the pegs of the Mishkan and of the chatzer, of the courtyard, those should all be made of nechoshes, of copper. Now, what utensils and what pegs are we talking about? So the utensils would be, how about hammers to bang things together? How about
needles?
Okay, needles. I don't know if needles. Perhaps this needles would only be a one-time use to make it. This is talking about regular use. You had to bang things together, take things apart. Whatever types of they didn't use screwdrivers, but I'm saying whatever types of tools you needed to use to erect and to dismantle the Mishkan. Those tools were made out of copper. And the pegs, what are these pegs? Because you have all these tapestries. You have the tapestries of the Mishkan. You have these curtains that are hanging from hooks all around the courtyard. But what's going to keep the bottom from swaying in the wind? From blowing in the wind? So they had pegs that they used, which were driven into the ground, that held down the tapestry, that held down the curtains of the courtyard. All of those were also made out of copper. And that's how you kept everything together, was with copper pegs that were driven into the ground to hold everything in. So let's begin here our discussion of the courtyard with what we just read. What does it mean in Pasuk Yirches in verse 18 when it says the width was 50 by 50? Again, that doesn't make sense. Usually when you talk about one direction, you give one number. So the Mishkan, as we know, the courtyard was 100 amos long and 50 amos wide. And we'll draw it this way. So it was 100 long and it was 50 amos in height. Or in, I should say, in width. Okay? So it's 100 by 50. As we just learned, this middle part here of the courtyard was actually not connected together. Otherwise, you have no way of getting in or out. So it was a masach, it was a screen, which in this picture, they draw the screen here. That's where they draw the screen. It is possible, of course, that the screen might have been here. It doesn't tell you where the screen goes in the Torah. However, the reason why they choose to put the screen on the outside is because of this, what we're about to explain. Where in this courtyard does the Mishkan go? Now, the Mishkan was 30 amos by 10 amos. That we learned already. So, was 20 amos by... It was, 30 amos by 10 amos. It was 30 amos by 10 amos. So, where in this courtyard does the Mishkan go? Should you place the Mishkan exactly in the middle of the courtyard? Where does the Mishkan go? Perhaps the Mishkan goes like that. Where does the Mishkan go in this courtyard? So we learn from this statement that it says the length is 100 and the width is 50 by 50. 50 by 50, the width is 50. So that teaches us that there should be an area that is completely empty of the Mishkan, which is 50 by 50. Which means that you should picture the courtyard split in half, and you have a 50 by 50. You have this square, which is 50 by 50, and this square, which is 50 by 50. Look at it that way. The Mishkan goes in the far 50 by 50, the back 50 by 50. That's where the Mishkan goes. The front area should be 50 by 50 without the Mishkan. The Mishkan goes in the back, and the way you place it is like this. So it is, this is going to be 30 by 10. It's going to be 30 by 10. And you're going to put it with the opening of the Mishkan right at the midpoint of the chatzar of the courtyard. Now if you think about it, if this is 30 by 10, if right in the middle it's 10 amos wide, and the whole thing is 50 amos wide, then that leaves 20 amos here, and 20 amos here. Because it's going to be 20, 10, and 20 is 50. And if this from here to here is 30 amos, then from here to here is also going to be 20 amos. So every side of the Mishkan, from the side of the Mishkan to the wall, to the chatzar, to the edge of the courtyard, is going to be 20 amos. That's going to be the symmetry of the Mishkan. But the front area of the courtyard is completely empty of the Mishkan. But it's not completely empty. What goes there?
The altar.
The Mizbeach is going to go in the courtyard. Exactly how it's going to look, they draw it here in the middle, but it's going to be a large altar, which, well, it's not as large as I'm drawing it, it's smaller than this, but it's, what were the dimensions? Anybody remember the dimensions of the altar? It's 5 by 5. It's 5 by 5 with the ramp that extends in this direction. So you're going to have the Mizbeach, the altar, is going to be the dominant thing, the only thing, in this part of the courtyard. And then the Mishkan is going to be the dominant feature in the other side of the courtyard. But the courtyard, although it's 100 by 50, it's actually two sections of 50 by 50, with one for the Mizbeach, for the altar, and one for the Mishkan, for the tabernacle itself. And it appears to me that's why they chose to draw the door, the screen on the outside, because if you put the screen on the inside, you're going to reduce the size of this 50 by 50 courtyard. So it would appear, therefore, the screen goes on the outside, not to reduce the size of the 50 by 50 on the inside. Okay, any questions on this? Now, a few other observations about the courtyard and things that we learn from it.
Where was the Kodesh Kodashim?
So the Mishkan itself was divided up into a two-thirds, one-third breakdown. This being the Kodesh Kodashim, 10 by 10, and this being the Kodesh 20 by 10. So you have the Torah wants a courtyard around the Mishkan, and we have dimensions of that courtyard. What is the purpose of the curtains around the courtyard? What are the curtains doing that are around the courtyard?
Showing the boundaries for every group of women who's allowed to go there.
Okay, so it's giving you boundaries. It's showing you where the dimensions of the courtyard are. That's the purpose of it.
Yeah, right.
Now, why do we need to know where the boundaries of the courtyard are? What difference does it make? The Mishkan contains certain things in it. We have to know where they go. The Mishkan is actually a structure. It's got a roof. It's got a building. The courtyard, why do we need to know where the boundaries of the courtyard are? What's the purpose of those boundaries? There's going to be a discussion about the sanctity of the various areas. So it's true that the boundaries definitely imply a certain sanctity. We're going to find that certain karbonos, certain sacrifices, would only be able to be eaten within the courtyard of the Mishkan, while others could be eaten beyond the courtyard. When we get to Yerushalayim and we build the temple in Jerusalem, then we're going to find that the courtyard here is what is called Har HaBayis, it's called the Temple Mount in Yerushalayim. Meaning the same sanctity that the courtyard of the Mishkan has is the sanctity of the Har HaBayis, of the Temple Mount in Yerushalayim. Today, the wall that we have in Yerushalayim, the Western Wall, that wall is the wall of what? What then?
The wall of the structure of the temple.
Well, it is a wall, but it is not the wall of the temple itself. What is it the wall of?
The wall of the courtyard.
It's the wall of the courtyard of the temple. It is not the wall of the temple. Meaning that, again, this is not the Beis HaMikdash. This is the Mishkan. This is the tabernacle. But the equivalent that we have today would be this wall. That's what we have. Not the wall of the Mishkan, which in the Beis HaMikdash is equivalent to the temple itself, but rather the wall that was the western wall of the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash of the temple. That's what we have today, that wall. Yeah.
The wall that we have, was it on this, the inside of the courtyard, or it's the outside?
Well, we have the full wall, but what you mean, where do we stand when we go there today?
Yeah.
We're on the outside.
Okay.
We're on the outside. We're not on the inside. We're on the outside of it.
Gotcha.
That's where we are. So there are certain sacrifices which could only be eaten on the inside of the courtyard, which if you transpose that to today's temple, where the temple would be, if we had it, but where the wall is today, it would be on the other side of the wall. Not where you stand today when you go to Israel and you visit the Kotel. It would be on the other side where the holiest of the most sanctified of the sacrifices need to be eaten. There are other sacrifices which could be eaten in the entire city, which would be mean the old city of Jerusalem. So there, you do need a demarcation line of where the courtyard begins and where the courtyard ends. Why do we need it to be curtains? Why couldn't it just be some sort of a furrow in the ground, which would show us where the line is? Why does it need to be curtains?
I'm just guessing. Sense of privacy.
Okay, privacy. Yeah. That's a good answer. That's a good answer.
Huh?
Sneers. Sneers. Yeah.
But curtains are more aesthetic than furrows.
Okay, nicer. We've talked several times and shown how the Mishkan has been a paradigm of tzius, of privacy. We've shown that in several places in the construction of the Mishkan, that it was meant to project a message of tzius, of modesty. And with a courtyard, it is appropriate to have some sort of, not just a boundary, but the boundary would be one that also includes privacy. Which leads to two opinions about the height of the curtains. One opinion is the opinion that we read, which is the simple reading of the psukim of the verses, is that the height was 5 amos. After all, that's what it says. In Pasuk Yurches, in verse 18, it says, V'koma chamesh amos. And the height was 5 cubits, 5 amos. So it would seem that that's the height of the curtains. But, I'm going to erase this now.
And in English, how high is that?
What?
In English, how high
5 amos is between 7.5 and 10 feet, which is pretty good for privacy. That works. However, there is a difference of opinion. Some say that the height of the curtains were 5 amos. The Mizbeach, the altar, remember, was 5 amos by 5 amos. That was its length and width. It was a square. It was 5 amos by 5 amos. How tall was the Mizbeach? Remember we talked about the height of the Mizbeach? Anybody remember how tall the Mizbeach was?
3 feet or 10 feet.
Okay. So the Machlokes, so one opinion is that it was 3 amos high. And one opinion is that it was 10 amos high, from top to bottom. That's a difference of opinion. With, of course, you have a ramp to get to the top. Should we go on referring to draw the entire ramp? If you say that it was 10 amos high, 10 amos is between 15 and 20 feet off the ground, that means when the Kohen walks to the top of the altar, he's standing on top of the altar. He's standing on top of the altar. So if the height of the curtains were only 5 amos high, if this was the curtain was only 5 amos high, then the Kohen serving on top of the altar had no privacy. Therefore, there is an opinion in the Gemara that the height of the curtain was not 5 amos as it says in the verse, at least what it seems to say in the verse, but the actual height was 15 amos high. And when it says in the Pasuk that the height was 5 amos, it means 5 more than the height of the altar. So that even a person standing on top of the altar is still going to have a measure of privacy because the curtains of the courtyard tower over the height of the altar by 5 amos, which is 7.5 to 10 feet, which is enough to give privacy to a person standing on top of the altar. So that is the difference of opinion, how tall the curtains of the courtyard were. Clearly, the opinion that says it was 15 amos is only consistent with the opinion that the altar was 10 amos. If the altar was only 3 amos, you wouldn't need 15 over here. But if the altar was 10, then there is an opinion that it was 15 amos high. What does this tell us about the service of the Mishkan? The top of the altar was used to burn fat limbs, etc., from the korbanos, from the sacrifices. So the very top of it, where there was a lot going on, it would appear that it was necessary to have privacy for that as well. Again, a message of tzius from the Mishkan, from the service in the Mishkan. Everything we've seen has projected that message. It's a message which is very difficult to speak about in our day and age because of the complete breakdown of any form of privacy that we have. I'm not even talking now about how people dress. I'm talking about the way that people project what they do. And I'm dealing here with everybody in this room is around my age or older, so we're not as affected by the absolutely, I don't even know a good word for it, but the terrible, terrible institution called Facebook, which is completely antithetical to all of our values, to have something on which a person puts everything about themselves for the world to see and know. And, you know, I've never been on Facebook. I don't know how to use it. I wouldn't want to. But I do get plenty of disputes, domestic, angry, feelings of resentment that are at least, if not caused by, but certainly are aided and abetted by this terrible thing called Facebook, because everybody knows what everybody else is doing. We don't believe that that's a good thing. It's not a good thing for everybody to know what everybody else is doing. We just read in this past week's parsha that Bilam said about the Bnei Yisrael, "Matovu ohalecha Yaakov mishkanosecha Yisrael, how goodly are your tents, Yaakov." Why? And the Gemara tells us because the doorways were not facing each other. You couldn't look from one tent into another tent. Nobody had a direct access to see into other people's tents. Everybody had a measure of privacy. Even when we were living in temporary dwellings, which is much harder to have privacy when you're living temporarily. When you have permanent structures, so you can build them in a permanent way. But here you're getting up, you're moving, you're resettling. So you could say, okay, you know, enough already. I don't have to worry about everybody else's tents. I can only worry about my tent. No, everybody had to make sure their tents were not facing any doorway of another tent, because it was important to maintain privacy. And the real picture of a utopian society, as far as the Torah is concerned, is one in which we don't know much about each other. We just don't know that much. It's better that we don't know so much about each other. You know a lot about your family. You know a lot about your spouse. You know a lot about your children. You know a lot about your parents. Maybe about your siblings. But you don't know that much about everybody else. You don't know what another person had for dinner. You don't know what another person has in their wardrobe. Unless they're, you know, you meet them, you see one outfit, but you don't know what they have in their wardrobe. You don't know where they went shopping. You don't know how much they paid. You don't know what kind of furniture they have. You don't. It's not out there. We just don't know that much about each other. It's not meant to be that everything that I have or do or am, everybody else knows also. And it's not a Torah ideal. The Torah ideal is that we just don't know that much about each other because we're not interested in finding out, and we're also not interested in letting other people know. I have no interest in letting all of you know about me, and none of you have any interest in finding out about me. That's the That is the way the Torah would properly set up a utopian society. The advent of, as I said before, of things like Facebook are only a using technology to further the goals of a society that is already antithetical to what the Torah's ideal is. Journalism in and of itself is already antithetical. The whole entertainment society is already antithetical. The whole idea of finding out about what a celebrity, the whole term celebrity, is a terrible thing as far as the Torah is concerned. This is not something that we're interested in. It's not something that's a good thing that everybody knows about everybody else. That type of society breeds jealousy, it breeds ego, and it ultimately brings to many, many, many terrible things that happen. Yeah.
Or these days even, you know, in cooking or, you know, in so many ways.
Yeah, so you're pointing out that there are certain positives. The negatives outweigh the positives overwhelmingly. There are some positives, like with everything, and there are always ways of finding things out that are necessary to find out, so that one can always ask, and one can always discuss. But the notion of deliberately publicizing is considered to be antithetical to what the Torah's ideal is. The Mishkan, or at least, I'm sorry, the courtyard of the Mishkan, also has something else about it, which is important, and that is the following. The dimensions are 100 amos by 50 amos. 100 amos by 50 amos. 100 by 50. 100 amos by 50 amos means that it was 5,000 square amos. It was 5,000 square amos. The Gemara derives from here, based on various verses, that this is a significant area when it comes to the laws of Shabbos. That 5,000 square amos is a significant area regarding some of the laws of Shabbos. What laws of Shabbos? So, for example, we know that there are certain domains on Shabbos. There is a Rishus HaYachid, a private domain. There's a Rishus HaRabim, a public domain. And there are things that kind of are in the middle between a private domain and a public domain. We know we're not allowed, if there is no Eruv, if there is no method to do so, the default is we're not allowed to carry an item on Shabbos from a private domain to a public domain or from a public domain to a private domain. We can't do that on Shabbos. How do we define a private domain? So private domain is what the word implies, private, which means it's owned by a single person rather than owned by the community. A public street is a public domain, generally speaking, where a private residence, residential home, is a private domain. But in addition to it being a private domain, it also generally needs to have some sort of structure of some sort of either wall or a halachic wall to set it apart from the public domain. So that you can have a private domain, which is a house. If the house has a yard, and the yard has a fence running along the yard, which differentiates between the private home and the public thoroughfare in front of the home, then you have a private domain. A private domain can be very large. It doesn't have to be a small place. Generally speaking, a private domain is small, because usually when one person or one family, one entity, owns something, it's usually rather small. Where the public domain, because it's for the public, it's for a lot of people, and it's the public that owns it, is usually a lot larger. So generally speaking, the public domain dwarfs the private domain. But it doesn't have to. You could have a very, very large estate which is owned by a single person or a single family, and it has a fence around it, and that will be a private domain. But the Gemara differentiates between a private domain where somebody lives there and a private domain that nobody lives there. Which means you could own property where it's your property, it's privately owned, but you don't live there. It's still a private domain, is it not? Nevertheless, there is a difference between a private domain that has a living quarters in it and a private domain that does not. A private domain that has a living quarters in it can be as large or as small as you wish, and it will still maintain the status of a private domain. But a private domain that does not have living quarters in it has a limit to how large it can be in order for it to maintain its special status as a private domain. And that limit is?
5,000
square amos. That's right. So that if you have an area which has a fence around it, you have your own piece of property, you bought it somewhere out of the main community, it's a nice area, it's a few acres that you purchased that area, it's fenced off, but if no one lives there, it's not, as they say, hukaf ledira, it's not fenced in for the purpose of living within it, then if it's larger than 5,000 square amos, then it will not have the special status, I thought I was going to draw it, it's not going to have the special status of a private domain, which does not mean that it is a public domain. It's not a public domain either, but it is not going to be the same. It's not going to have the same halachic status as a private domain. In a private domain, you can carry an item from one end of that domain to the other without a problem, without any eruv. If it's your place and it's fenced in, even if it is 100 acres large, you can carry from one end to the other if you live there. But if it is not a place where people live, it is just a private place which is fenced in but nobody lives there, then if it's larger than 5,000 square amos, you may not carry from one end to the other. It will have the limitations of a public domain, and that you can't carry more than 4 amos within it. It's going to have that limitation. So this is a complex piece of halacha, which isn't that relevant to us sitting around the table. Why am I emphasizing it?
Privacy.
Again, deriving from the Mishkan, what is called a private place? The Mishkan is going to be our example of an area that no one lives there. No human being lives there anyway. I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't live anywhere, but it's a place where he rests his presence, but nobody lives there, and it is surrounded by a wall, by a fence, and that's considered to be private. But if it were larger than that and nobody lives there, it would not have the status of privacy, again announcing to us the laws of what's private and what's public. It's derived from here. Another example of how the Mishkan becomes our paradigm of privacy. Today we have building codes, and we're limited by whatever those building codes are. Sometimes the building codes and what the Torah says overlap. Sometimes they are consistent with each other. There is a Mishnah that discusses the it discusses the distance you have to have between the top of your furnace and the ceiling for fire hazard. It's discussed in the Mishnah, just like we have codes today for, right? You have, sometimes they're consistent and sometimes they're not consistent. That's true. Sometimes they're not. There are rules in the Gemara that discuss privacy, that if I have a building and that building has a window, and then you put up a building next to mine, and now you make windows in your building, there are rules to protect my privacy that you're not allowed to simply build a window directly across from my window. You have to work it out differently, and there are different rules and codes for how to build it. So there are a lot of codes as well in the Gemara about building. when this being the Mishkan, which is meant to be the in certain ways a type of perfect structure, so the thing that we learn from here is about privacy. Ultimately, the message therefore is that a structure, a building, which is the inside, there's in this world we have inside and we have outside. Outside is outside. You're out in the elements. Inside is meant to provide certain things. Primarily, the reason to have an inside as opposed to an outside is to be protected. When we're inside, we're protected from the weather. In today's day and age, we're even protected from the heat and the cold. It's unbelievable what we have today. With air conditioning, we can even have temperature-controlled places because we're inside. You can't do that when you're outside. So inside provides comfort, it provides protection, it can provide safety, protection not only from the elements, but also from people. So inside provides all those things. The Torah is also telling us that in addition to those things which are perhaps the main reasons to have an inside, to have a building and not to live out in the wilderness, but one of the major things a person needs to be thinking about when dealing with an inside is privacy. That it's not only for comfort, not only for protection and for safety, but it is also for privacy. And that privacy is just as significant as physical protection and physical comfort. Privacy is also something which a structure is supposed to provide. If a structure does not provide that, it is lacking in the definition of a structure. A structure is meant to provide not only safety and protection and comfort, but also it is meant to provide privacy. Okay, so that brings us to the end of Parshas Teruma, and now we move to Parshas Tetzaveh, which we're not going to start today. I just want to give you a few words of introduction. So far, we've dealt with the Mishkan and its utensils. Now, Parshas Tetzaveh will move to the clothing of the Kohanim, of the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, and the Kohanim, the regular priests, what they have to wear while performing the service in the Mishkan. So Tetzaveh and Terumah go together as the two parashios that are involved in setting up the structure and the clothing that are needed in order to perform the service in the Mishkan. So, Mitzvah Hashem, next week we'll do that. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.